Hey, listeners, before jumping into today's episode on revolutionizing healthcare through OTC switches, let's acknowledge how MatchRx, today's sponsor, has been revolutionizing how independent pharmacies manage overstocked prescription meds. With a community of over 7,000 pharmacies, including my own, MatchRx offers a simple, fast, and reliable online marketplace to buy and sell excess meds, ensuring you are DSCSA compliant. It's a tool I trust for my pharmacy inventory needs. Discover more at MatchRx.com and mention this podcast when you sign up. You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Fadi, for those that haven't come across you online, introduce yourself and tell our listeners what we're talking about today.
I'm Fadi Bakhter, President and Chief Commercial Officer of Petros Pharmaceuticals, a publicly traded company on NASDAQ, ticker is PTPI. We have one prescription erectile dysfunction medication currently in market and happens to be our core subject and ambition to switch to over-the-counter, which we'll dive deeper into. And that leads me into the thing for everybody to tune into. It's a fascinating marketplace. It's an emerging marketplace. And very few windows in life, we have opportunities to get a hold of something before it's caught mainstream and before it's become ubiquitously known. And I think this podcast serves as a precursor to such a thing, such an opportunity. And that is in the emerging self-care marketplace, more specifically, involves prescription to over-the-counter switches. So imagine a lot of your preferred and dependent upon prescription medications now being available to you in this coming era, available to you without a prescription. So you no longer have to set an appointment with your physician. We'll talk about a tremendous physician shortage to counteract that and the medication being available to you at your local pharmacy or for you to purchase online without a prescription, a tremendous empowerment to the U.S. consumer patient.
Now, Fadi, we old farts, as we look back, I'm not saying you, I'm saying...
Oh, I'm right there with you.
I'm saying me and some of our listeners, we old farts, as we go back, we think, all right, you're saying emerging, but we know all these products that have gone to OTC. Is there a upward slope in your mind or is something different from what you're seeing now? Or are you just championing the cause which has been going on?
Phenomenal question because it touches on a dichotomy, a separation. Let me share with you what's occurring. So CHPA, Consumer Healthcare Products Association, they're out there watching and monitoring this marketplace. And they've been looking at it for some time. On their website, they've captured all the molecules, all the medications that were switched from prescription. So let me give you a flavor. Since 1974, 75, there's been about 106 switches. Of those, you'll find that the vast majority were essentially antihistamines, allergy medications, topicals, gels, and creams. And it's fantastic because it's enabled the consumer. Now, I've got allergy season coming up. I can go buy my Flonase. I can buy my nasal spray, my topical gel, my antihistamine, eye drops, all of it. It's phenomenal work. But that is one class of prescription OTC, the class I'm referring to, relatively benign medications in terms of risk and adverse events. And so that, yes, has been around for some time. Some may say maybe they should have never been prescription in the first place. But nevertheless, it speaks to the dynamic and the gravity of those switches. What we're talking about as a new horizon is now we're talking about medications that have never been imagined for over-the-counter switch. And that's where the new horizon comes in. So today, think of your standard migraine medication, your standard antidepressant medication, your standard hypertension medication, medications that are critical for your chronic therapeutic value. But sometimes you can't get in to see your physician. Sometimes you can't get your refill. Sometimes you just need the fluidity of those medications that have never been entertained for over-the-counter. In 2022 specifically, the FDA had proposed a rule, proposed a new stipulation of additional conditions for non-prescription use that essentially opens a door for companies like ours to begin to introduce technology that enables the consumer to appropriately self-select nuanced in quote-unquote complex pharmaceuticals without the physician intermediary. That opens up a new gateway. It almost redefines what this OTC self-care marketplace can and should look like. And I think that's the new horizon. It's a new grade of prescription-grade medications that are now becoming prospects for over-the-counter switch. That is exciting.
It's interesting as you go on to, I'm just going to say Amazon or any of these places that have the online telemedicine, and they're very divided by different categories. And so it's interesting to me because it used to be people would go to the doctor and they'd say, hey, doc, I'm just not feeling quite right. But now you really go on to these things and you have to choose between a urinary tract infection, the flu, a pulled muscle in your side, or something like that. In other words, they almost make you diagnose yourself.
That's right.
Before you pick what the doctor's going to do for you. The word that caught me was technology. What do you mean by technology in this space?
Yeah, so technology merging, and I'll say inherently, and I'll confess this, I'm not a huge technology buff. I don't look at technology and everything to make it a better world. In this particular scenario, it's different. Technology in this particular scenario is essentially back-end, backstage, designed and calculated algorithms that ask the patients questions about their medical history, for example, ask the patient questions about their symptomology and what brings them to this product today. And based on the patient's response, what it does is it enables the appropriate label, FDA-approved label and drug facts label, a guided knowledge to apply to that patient's disposition and then interpret whether or not appropriate for selection or necessary for deselection, in which case refer to a physician for greater care. I think it's overdue. The algorithms are the same decision models that physicians will often use in the primary care setting. And now we're just putting them instantaneously at the fingertips of the patient, potentially on a mobile phone, potentially by way of a QR code, potentially in a very transient engagement mechanism that enables what would normally be a 30-minute visit, you know, not including the travel to the office and back, for it to be a few minutes for the patient to say, here's my symptoms, here's my condition, here's what I'm looking for, here's my medical history, am I good? If it's approved, and this is all mandated and governed by the FDA, by the way, that patient can go home with medication that very moment.
What do you mean they can go home with it in that regard?
It's in the pharmacy, as quick as the local retail pharmacy, whether it's...
I gotcha. Instead of through the doctors doing this.
Exactly. Or order it online for it to be delivered, as you can tell, today, 24 to 48 hours. So online purchasing, no physician visit necessary.
Gotcha.
Or at the local retail pharmacy.
Well, there's a lot of things. I mean, now, if I go in, let's say, for a yearly checkup or something, and I'm in the medical field, so it's not really a fair comparison. But when I go into the doctor, I don't need really to talk about how my cholesterol's doing or how my weight's doing or how's this rash you had last year and that kind of things. When I go in there, I want to talk to them about, oh, this weird tickle in my throat. And is it coming from the larynx or the pharynx, or is it coming from, I don't even know if pharynx a word. Is that what?
It is now.
It is now. It's coming from the larynx, or is it post-nasal drip? Let's talk about something that is needed person to person rather than the stuff that can be done with technology.
That's a good point. Let me know if this touches on your points, but I think in light of the massive direct-to-consumer education and awareness and advertising, many patients, first of all, know how to self-diagnose. They know all about WebMD. They see these commercials for various medications. In the erectile dysfunction space, it's dominated really by a class of medications called PDE5 inhibitors. And this will touch on your point. PDE5 inhibitors include the Viagra, the Cialis's, the Levitras, and then our flagship pharmaceutical called Stendra, all of them in the same class. There's a tremendous amount of education to the public as to there is a prescription grade ED medication for you. And what is erectile dysfunction? It's when I cannot attain erection for sexual intercourse. Very self-acknowledged circumstance and symptom. The question is, there are risks with these medications. And there are guidelines for safe use. So on the front end, to your point, on the front end, relatively easily self-diagnosable. On the front end, readily and easily identifiable as a class therapeutic. On the back end, wait a minute, there's some concerns. This is the FDA's job. There are concerns. How do we ensure that they are not on nitrates, which is a contraindication? How do they ensure that they don't have any cardiovascular conditions that are warnings and precautions for use? How do we know that they've been ill-advised for sexual activity and therefore shouldn't take this medication and so forth and so on? Where technology comes in is this is our job and this is the technology platform we're charged to build. It has to speak to those guardrails and controls to ensure the FDA, to assure them we've covered off on all the critical matters of issue and concern. And if the patient responds and self-identifies as appropriate, no markers of risk, then they could easily and readily pick up the prescription from the retail pharmacy or order online for it to be delivered within a few hours to a few days. And I think that's where the innovation lies. Never before has there been a drug device combination in this space to enable nuanced medications to be readily available to the right patients. And I think that's where it changes the game.
All right, Fadi, you mentioned some of this earlier. Here's what I'm imagining now if somebody made me invent this right now. So I would make a handheld app, and that app, I don't know if I would trust, if it's non-controlled, I would probably trust people enough to tell me they're on a nitrate or have other blood pressure things or stuff going on, but I might log into something with the cell phone that proves to the FDA and you guys that I'm not on one of these. I don't know how quite I would do that. But then when everything gets correct to me, maybe I would have a QR code that the pharmacy would have to scan to allow this to go out or something like that. All right, now tell me what reality is.
You're not far off. Where the reality of technology, and this is relatively nascent, this is emerging. We've got a few companies that are in this space today that we know of. And so just keep in mind that this technology will continue to evolve. Mm-hmm. But let me shed some light as to where some of it might be trending. So imagine that today there's a massive movement for health data health exchange. So whether it's your electronic health records, prescription data already covers 95% of the US population. And that could be readily integratable, potentially. That doesn't exist today, but that could exist in the future. So the nitrate question that you mentioned, that's one mechanism that could enable our product and future products to say, well, let's do a quick prescription history check to see what you've been on. And that could happen instantaneously. That could be integrated and has the potential of being integrated. Doesn't exist today, but could. We're imagining and hypothesizing for the future. That's readily available. EHR, same concept. Interoperability, there is a plethora and disparity among EHRs. But there is a national standard existing today where everything should speak to everything. So if we needed to check in the EHR for the patient, we could do that instantaneously. Well, it doesn't exist today, but it has a promise of coming to the future. The way we ask the questions is another element. If you ask a question, for example, nitrates, we ran into this issue. And I think many of the individuals in this field would know this. Sometimes some patients have been advised by their patient that it's okay for them to take this class of medication with nitrates. That is a no-go for the FDA. And by our label standards, we align. What we could do is ask them several questions. Do you have a nitrate, but you were approved by your physician? Have you had a nitrate prescription, but you've never filled it? Have you had a nitrate prescription that you filled but never used? We can kind of dissect all the nuances and implicit biases within the patient and say, okay, we now know your true disposition. It's okay, but you're not right for this medication. So go see your physician and get your prescription through him or her. That's where some of these nuances are captured and dealt with. And that's where the near future emerging technology will come to play in terms of integration with big data.
I see that being valuable because the example I gave, well, now you're using data that's weak. I mean, we know that, I don't know, a certain percentage of the medicine's not picked up from the pharmacy. And then maybe someone's not using their nitrates because it's giving them a headache and they're not really on them and all this kind of stuff. Well, I don't really know who has that information except for somebody telling the truth on their handheld. And maybe, like, again, maybe there's some fibbing going on with controlled drugs and stuff like that. But I think most people probably want to, especially if they think people are looking out for them, they probably want to be honest on those questions. I don't know.
You'd hope so. You'd hope so and you'd think so. And nevertheless, and rightfully so, the FDA won't accept those chances and they won't accept those assumptions. So they're going to want to know there's an ironclad or relatively close to ironclad assurance the consumer is responding accurately and or there's a technology-assisted feature that ensures that they're compliant. And that is a reality of this process.
I got a relatively new Google Watch. I was waiting for the second one to come out, so I've got that now. And I was at my daughter's cheer competition. She's coaching the middle school people. And so I went there with my wife. And the problem is my wife was sitting to my left. I was right in the line of sight of her looking down to the cheer competition. I knew that wouldn't work because then I couldn't play on my watch. So I got on the left side of her and I'm just searching on my watch. And it felt like an important time to take my electrocardiogram or something. Like, what is that? I don't know, EKG or something. I thought this is a proper time for me to check my heart. And anyways, I just sat there and I put my finger on the crown and it gave me my EKG and stuff. And so that kind of stuff, I mean, you don't even have to lie about, you know, instead of answering questions about blood pressure with the nitrates and how is it going to go with this drug and all that. I mean, it could basically give you a diagnosis on your wrist with the EKG, the blood pressure, you know, your heart rate. I don't know what else would be in there. Maybe a breathalyzer test or something down the road. It may not even take human honesty. A lot of it might be right there for you.
I love that you brought that up. I think that is a phenomenal attribute and also another marker to this exciting emergence for this marketplace. Because to your point, I've seen, and this exists, it's public, it's ubiquitous. There are technology out there, utilities, that can take your vital signs right up from your phone. And we're talking pretty advanced vital signs. We're talking blood pressure, A1C, believe it or not. You know, EKG, to your point. We're so peculiar as creatures, I think, as human beings. Sometimes we're not as well calculated about managing our health the way we hope we would or the way we think we are because we're busy. We're so saturated. So to your point, you could in the middle of an event, in the middle of a game or a cheer event and decide, I wonder what my EKG looks like. I wonder what my blood pressure looks like and my A1C. And this is where you make change. And this is where you begin to inform for action. Where in the past, we were so bottlenecked with the only place you can get this done is either at the pharmacy or with the physician. But think of the time and energy and scheduling that requires for you to get such simple data at the fingertips. So that phenomenal point that you bring up, because that is also components of the technology to come, which will be objective vital signs taken right at the moment of transaction or in passing to let the consumer know, wait a minute, I think I have a blood pressure issue. Wait a minute, I think I have a heart issue. Who do I go see and what do I go get and what do I do? And that's how you incite change.
Well, my stuff at the game, I was just bored and goofing around. But part of what led up to that is we have a number of children and now all of them are past the cheerleading age and stuff and a lot of the sports. And my wife was commenting when we came in there, she said, boy, this is kind of a blast from the past and we don't do this as much anymore. And like I say, my daughter was coaching, so that was up a level. But it makes me think like, well, why did I do that right then? Number one, I was bored. But two, it was implanted in me that I'm getting older. I'm now going to be the grandpa figure and I'm moving up a generation. And I want to say that I just did my watch just for the hell of it. But probably in the back of my head, you just think about how's my health compared to everybody else. Now, who knows why I did it? But the point is that you can do it when you're ready for it. Yeah. When I was sitting there thinking about longevity, my health, family, that's when this health whatever came to me and I decided to do this. There's so much out there. Everybody knows we're supposed to take care of ourselves, but unless you talk to yourself in the right instant or somebody else brings it to you in the right instant, it doesn't matter as much. So being able to do these things on your phone and this and that when the urge strikes is maybe better than trying to fit your life into the medical system.
I love the way you coined that. And it's fascinating perspective. And when you were saying that, first thing that struck me was life's circumstance drives perspective. And life's circumstance and life's, you know, moments drive motivation. I'll share this with you and it'll speak to the same concept in many respects. So there are 30 million men who suffer from erectile dysfunction in this country. And a recent study went out and looked at 6 million men and their claims, actual insurance claims, and those men that were diagnosed with ED. So 6 million men diagnosed with ED, according to their insurance claims, only 25% of them sought prescription therapy. The other three quarters did not. And it speaks to the circumstance, the moment, the motivation, what will mobilize you, what will get just insight to move, to act. And three quarters have not. It's funny though, you say what you just said, and you're sitting there and you're reflecting, and all of a sudden those questions and that self-reflection leads you to taking a step to learn more. Am I there? And what do I need to do? And what have I not thought about? And then now you're inciting change. And I'll tell you one quick important piece. When it comes to erectile dysfunction, it's been demonstrated that often there's an underlying cardiovascular condition. The artery in the penis is a fraction of the size of the artery in the heart. If you are beginning to experience atherosclerosis, plaque, it'll show up in your erections. Before, it showed as a heart attack in your heart. And so the millions of men out there that are deciding, ED, I'm too embarrassed, I don't want to. What if you reached out to that individual or those individuals and said to them, hey, do you know that you might have an underlying cardiovascular condition that could translate into a heart attack in 3, 4, 5, 6 years? Then you'll start to get different mobility and different motivation to not only treat the erectile dysfunction, which is the least component, although for social engagement, it's critical. It'll also get them to start asking questions, what else is happening? And I never knew, I have no symptoms for any heart conditions. But in fact, your ED is a symptom for your heart condition. And so to your point, meet the consumer when they have those invaluable, precious moments of self-reflection, insight, and motivation. Give them the data they need, give them the information and the access they need, and then watch public health transform.
You know, Fadi, I don't allow myself to talk about medical stuff on here because I usually either embarrass myself or I'm at about a second grade level and people turn off the show. But when you look at some of this stuff about the past, like they always say, Americans are obese, and you look at these pictures from concerts in 1970s, and look, you can't see a fat person in the group. They're all slender and no bellies and stuff like that. ED, is that getting worse? Is it not related? Do you think the same prevalence was here 100 years ago that it is now? It's just being talked about and so on? Or is there any... You mentioned cholesterol. I don't know even those stats if it's getting worse or not, but would you say ED is getting worse, or is it just the same and now it's more talked about?
I'll bolt onto your comment to saying, yes, as the country experiences a tremendous increase in obesity and diabetes, those are absolutely core or comorbid issues for erectile dysfunction. So I would imagine that ED is increasing. And I'll tell you something that's interesting recently that we've learned. We used to think that erectile dysfunction was just an aging man's problem. 40 plus, the percentages begin to increase exponentially as you age. Well, recently what they realized and what they've discovered through recent research studies that we're starting to see men, one out of four men, 25% of men emerging with a diagnosis of ED under the age of 40. And then that begins to speak to potentially substance abuse, earlier age or earlier onset of obesity, earlier onset of diabetes. Because we are living unhealthily, we are living more static, we're not moving, we're not exercising. So for all those reasons, I would say often, yes, public health trends such as poor health maintenance will begin to show an increase in erectile dysfunction, generally speaking, yes. And age, the younger, and it's getting younger and younger as far as prevalence. So it is a sad but promising thing that we can begin to see the correlation. And we think some people might spin up erectile dysfunction. So what? You want to take your prescription medication and switch it to over-the-counter. So what? There's actually a big so what. Because the more you engage patients for one condition, you might be turning them on and educating them on a plethora of other comorbidities or another core comorbidity that they've never tuned into. And so it matters. It's all integrated. It matters.
In this march towards getting this and the whole country moving in this direction with over-the-counter switches and things like that, is there any part of it that kind of pisses you off? Like, this government agency is stalling, and what would piss me off even more is if it was stalling because of somebody greasing their palms instead of maybe stalling for medical reasons. And as I say that now, I'm thinking of who's out there on the other side, the dark side, compared to you guys of trying to put the kibosh on that, if there is anyone.
It's an interesting perspective. I'll coin it this way. I think there's a health, I don't want to even call it tension, but there is a healthy tug of war with the FDA. The FDA has a big job to do, tremendous responsibility to keep the public health at the forefront of their thoughts. that is a challenge, especially when you start to move into new emerging technologies, new emerging platforms. They have to make sure they do their due diligence and ensure that we're an industry are coming to them with the very best, with the very proven, and with assurance that this is a contributor to better public health versus simply just a new marketing ploy. So for that reason, I respect their rigidity. I respect their standard. I respect their timeliness. On the other hand, from an industry perspective, where there's tremendous investment and risk, as there should be, it's tough sometimes to track where we should be and how we're progressing, but while we're sort of operating in somewhat ambiguity. So I'll say that if I had to name a frustration, it is trying to meet the standard of the FDA with consistent and constant and reliable feedback to ensure that the public health is safe. But we're both on the same team. We're both fighting for the same endpoint. I think we're going to get there. And I think the FDA has made tremendous strides in the recent history, especially we're talking mid-2022. I'll applaud them. Since 2012, they had indicated they wanted to launch ensure non-prescription utilization regulation. And they've been working through that together. And they have a country to carry. They have a country to care for the past 10 plus years. In 2022, they proceeded with a proposed rule. And they're looking to bring that proposed rule to policy by April of next year. So we see them moving and we see them taking leaps forward. So that's promising. And that helps alleviate some of the procedural challenges that are before us. And hopefully we'll continue to find ourselves kind of aligning better, better and better. So the investment dollars are truly producing innovative technologies for the sake of the American public. But that is a rate limiting factor that's always on top of our minds.
Is there anybody that would not be happy to see this go through? And I'm talking prescription competitors, the AMA, a pharmacy group, not so much a consumer group, but the sales of some big organizations, things like that. Anybody this would not be good for?
So it's interesting. I think one or two entities come to mind. This is not definitive, but this is anecdotal. And this is also us trying to foresee where that some of the tension might come from. The AMA physicians, primary care physicians, might feel as though this impedes on their territory. And we have data to show it will not for several reasons. We see that in 2023, and sure enough, 2030, we're going to face 100,000 plus physician shortage in this country. And we're already backlogged in terms of people being able to make just ordinary appointments, even with the advent of telemedicine being so ubiquitous. There's still tremendous delay. There's still tremendous gaps. So I imagine that will be on their minds. We'll have to try to align with them and show them the data and also listen to see what their concerns are. But I do imagine primary care physicians might see this impeding on their territory. Although again, nothing definitive, nothing formal. And that's really it. I'll say that the FDA has bought into the resounding preference by the American public to take control of their health and to have more self-care options. And I'll quickly mention this. There's a proxy, there's a precedent for this. And the precedent is Nicoderm and for tobacco use and cigarette use. When it was prescription, it was utilized in a relatively light manner. When it went OTC, they saw 150 to 200% increase in utilization. And so we think that those kinds of truths, those kinds of data points will consolidate and gather whatever misalignments exist out there to show that this is, in fact, will be better for the public. Primary care physicians now will see patients who have maybe taken the first step or two of their self-care, and they're coming to see the physician to say, I've tried such and such, but it's not working. What else can I do? And what else should I pay attention to? And then education on nutrition and the education on lifestyle adjustments ensue better than the consumer being isolated from healthcare and not even taking a first step. So we think there will be some synergies that will present themselves.
All right. So I see this, Fadi, kind of working around the edges where it's good for the consumer because they can get this information and get the product and it's safe for them. And it's good for the PCP maybe because it takes some of the stress off the fringe, you know, and let people do some of their stuff. Do you always see these just kind of going together like puzzle pieces, or is there a bigger shift that could come?
Let me approach it this way. Let me know if this doesn't touch your point. I think it's all contributory. I think it's all additive. And by that, I mean, when you look at our health and this is integrative medicine is becoming well known. Integrative medicine says that the fact that you have a runny nose could indicate that you have other issues. The fact that you have migraines or headaches means you might have other issues. There are superficial elements to our healthcare that only begin to scratch the surface to a deeper purpose and issue. You think of toenail fungus, well, you've got gut health issues. You think of obesity. Sometimes that is your fault. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's A1C and blood sugars and diabetes. I think this is all contributory because the more engagement a consumer has with healthcare, I think the more informed they are and the more skin in the game they have, which means it's their metrics, it's their data, it's their vital signs, it's their trial of certain medications and the failure or success of those medications that begin to tell them a story of what else do I need to do? It's better than lack of engagement. Lack of engagement has us drown in our ignorance. We forget the core and we forget the underlying condition. So I believe the better we get at engaging the consumer, even if it's superficially, even if it's at the retail or pharmacy aisle, the better we engage them, inform them, and educate them to say, keep digging because there's something deeper going on. Keep going. Then physicians will begin to see their patients, seeing them for the right reasons after the right walk and experiences.
It's interesting you mentioned about the prevalence of the ED patients or people that don't get help, because you always hear that. You'll always hear somebody say, I went into the doctor and I was doing great and I got on the treadmill and before they could even tell me to stop, they whisked me off the treadmill and they gave me a quadruple bypass. And they said, you know, I only had this long to live and all that kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, it's either people embellishing the story to make it sound good, or we don't have very good tests to find that stuff, because it always seems like I guess that's what it's for. It's a treadmill test. But how valuable might that be of those 75% of the people or whatever the figure was that people don't get help, if somehow maybe it doesn't tell them, hey, we're making a doctor appointment for you, but at least it might say, hey, the fact that you're looking at this ED stuff, have you thought about heart stuff? Have you taken your EKG with your phone? Do you want to sign up for something to wear a heart monitor or something? It's like, that might be the first step into something that you could go to a doctor's appointment. And if you're embarrassed about, let's say, ED, you don't bring that up. You don't bring up anything about a heart palpitation because you didn't really know what it was, this and that. And apparently those can go unnoticed because we got the treadmill stories.
Bullseye. That's exact bullseye. 100% agreed. Imagine this for a moment. Imagine you have a 35, 40-year-old man, but male. And let's say that he's got young kids and let's call them in their middle school, early high school era. And see, he wants to take care of himself because he wants to make sure that he's there for them. No symptoms, no other symptoms, relatively healthy, maybe minorly obese, but, you know, plays in the local men's baseball league or basketball league. And he thinks he's generally healthy. He engages sexual dysfunction, or he realizes and comes across sexual dysfunction with his wife. So all of a sudden, erectile dysfunction is starting to show up more and more often, more and more frequently. He's like, this is interesting. I must just be getting older. And so let's say he has options. He can call up his primary care doctor to say, hey, I'm generally healthy, and I have no other symptoms, but I just can't make it work anymore. What's wrong? But he's like, the reward, risk reward for that engagement, not really my interest. Then they can go on WebMD and read, and then you'll get a plethora of information on erectile dysfunction and medications and therapies. All good in there. Okay, what do I do? I have to go see a physician and get a prescription. What we're trying to achieve is the following scenario. Imagine he says he goes to the local retail because he sees an ad to say, now pick up your prescription grade ED medication at your local pharmacy. He goes and he picks it up, and this, the FDA will require this. On the label, it says ED can be a sign of cardiovascular conditions, even without symptoms, other symptoms, that is. And then also, it shows and continues on in the medical history questionnaire says, have you ever had a heart attack? Have you ever had such and such? And then even then, in that cardiovascular line of questioning, it could be a sign of silent cardiovascular conditions. Now, all of a sudden, this father who wants to make sure he takes care of his health, he's no longer looking at his ED alone. Now he's thinking about, wait a minute, I've heard of the Widowmakers. I've heard of massive heart attacks. I've heard of it affecting my uncle at the age of 50. I've heard of it affecting my father at the age of 55. Huh. Now he sets an appointment exactly like you just said and then meets the cardiologist, not to say I have ED, but to say, hey, could you work me up? Could you see this thing about coronary artery disease? And can you just make sure I have no underlying cardiovascular conditions? The cardiologist might say, are you suffering anything else? And he might say, actually, yeah, ED. And that's how I learned to come here. And then it becomes a secondary, but the primary is to look for the underlying disease. 100% agree. I think that is the journey that we're after.
There might be some men, they have a little bit of chest pain. They think it's indigestion or they pulled a muscle or something like that. But if they were to have read 7 days earlier that ED might be related to heart problems or issues, it might be a different story when they feel that compared to thinking they have the two I mentioned.
That's right. Absolutely. That's right. Then the motivation and the follow through. It's like you mentioned with your friend who went and had a stress test and all of a sudden they're putting him on a stretcher and giving him stents and a triple or quadruple bypass. I can imagine it changed his world. He's probably coming out of that thinking, what am I eating? What am I drinking? How am I living? How much am I drinking? How much am I smoking? And then all of a sudden, the motivation behind the change becomes significant. So I agree with you. But why wait till you're at, God forbid, death's door? Why not get the shocker when everything is relatively silent and change could have a major impact on trajectory?
Fadi, let's talk about the business in general. So you're the chief commercial officer. When I think of commercial, I'm thinking of sales, but I'm also thinking more, you don't hear that term as much, I don't think, in medicine, because that's more the clinical discussion with the doctor and that kind of stuff. Commercial kind of sounds to me more like the commercial, direct to patient kind of thing. Does that word have that meaning as far as your title?
It has meaning. I've been blessed and afforded with a great deal of responsibility with the organization. So commercial is certainly probably the core and the prominent presence, because the medication that we're looking at and the medications that we're going to be looking at in the future have already been clinically proven. These are medications that have undergone extensive clinical studies. And now we're just looking to switch them from prescription to OTC. A lot of those studies are qualitative in nature. A lot of them are clinically relevant and clinically related and specific, but they're qualitative in perspective. And then on top of that, it's the commercialization component. It's the FDA labeling. It's the FDA approval. It's the management of vendor and collaborators and partners. For all those reasons, I do touch regulatory, I do touch operations, all things from current existing sales to current existing commercial to future forecasts and commercial to investor relations. And so it's a diverse role. We do not have a sitting CEO. I am essentially the acting executive officer. We are backed by two tremendous thought leaders in the space, John Shulman, who's the principal of Juggernaut Capital Partners, and Greg Bradley, who's the president and CEO of Foundation Consumer Healthcare. His company, after Plan B One Step went from prescription to OTC, commercialized it to becoming the number one selling SKU in the US. That's another good proxy story to show tremendous use once the hindrance of a visit is removed. They are our leads and guides. And I'm sort of the execution officer. So I help execute on all things commercial, all things regulatory, all things clinical. I'm grateful for it, but my role, my true role, does broaden beyond chief commercial officer.
Is that any kind of a strategy to not have a CEO, or does it just so happen that you're in this situation?
There is a strategy behind it. And the predominant strategy is, you have two well-known figures on your board. And John Shulman, him and his team have worked with Dwayne The Rock Johnson, that you might know, Zoa, which is an energy drink, and drove it to tremendous commercialization. And again, with Plan B One Step, the track record's known. And I've got two tremendous thought leaders guiding and leading. So the strategy there is, why bring in a chief executive officer when really what needs to be executed is to tell the story, pull through the story, bring the unprecedented market, make sure that you manage a team, it's lean, it's nimble, and optimize your dollars for the sake of execution when you already have visionary and tremendous experience on your board. Yeah, I think it's been a very, very productive and beneficial strategy, I would say. We move quickly. I consult with those two all the time, and they share their network, they share their partners, they share their experience and expertise. What's left is now go and execute. and go pull through.
Do you have anybody else in the C-suite? In other words, chief this, chief that?
Oh, absolutely. So I do have a chief financial officer, an interim chief financial officer, Bob Weinstein. He's on the team. I have a chief accounting officer, Mitch Arnold. He's also on the team. And together we come together and talk about the financial health of the company, the performance, future forecasts, future considerations. We talk about gross to nets all the time, net profits, and what we're doing today with prescription medication and what we would like to do in the future while keeping it unit economic friendly to the consumer. So yeah, we do have a lean C-suite team.
All right, Fadi. So out of all the groups that you have to work with that you mentioned, the FDA and this regulation and that kind of stuff, are there any personalities? Do any of those groups attract certain personalities that it's hard to work with? Let me give you an example. I don't like talking to nurses so much at the pharmacy because they always seem to call and they're so dogmatic in what happened. It's like, we faxed over this to so-and-so and you didn't fill it this and that. And it's like, I don't know, I've got record of every fax that came in. I never saw it on the morning that you said you did it, this and that, whatever. And they're so dogmatic about it. I wish they would say, hey, we think we sent this over. Can you check this and that? My thought is that they get their ass chewed out by the doctors all the time.
Yeah.
And then they've got to chew somebody out. Also, let's chew out the pharmacist. Any groups that you don't seem to gel with because they have a chip on their shoulder, whether it's the FDA or the AMA or Wall Street, this or that?
You know, to be honest with you, not a single point of contention today.
Now, today.
Everybody we've talked to, we have an amazing consultancy advisory board with urologists, cardiologists, primary care internists, all have been advocates of this transition and the switch. The FDA, we recently had a meeting with them and we announced this publicly. They've been forthcoming and they've been very, very transparent in their interest in seeing solutions to address the sexual dysfunction public health issue in America. So they've got their sleeves rolled up. I think if we ever find ourselves misaligned with the FDA, it's a healthy and welcome misalignment. What are you seeing? What are we not seeing? And help us. And then let's bite the bullet and let's proceed. And we'll always make sure that it's reasonable. It's within a scope. We're not redoing stuff that doesn't need to be redone. That's our personal philosophy. So no points of contention today. Obviously, we expect for there to be. This is a new horizon. And whenever new horizons come to play, individuals will say, wait a minute, that concerns me. But they have not come to light today. I think everybody you've talked to, everybody we've engaged with has been open and ready and engaged. I'll say if I had to put one area of issue, it's with time. It's with time. How much time will it take for us to make this case? How much time and investment and resources will it take for us to achieve this climb?
Yeah.
And we're racing against the clock. We have ambitions and we have advisors and experts telling us, you're moving in the right direction. Here's what you can expect. But time will always be on our minds. Recruitment is an issue. So as you recruit, especially spouse populations, sometimes recruitment can be significant delays, which again points to the factor of time.
Recruitment of?
Patients.
Consumers,
yeah, for our studies. So
for your studies, I gotcha. Yeah.
In the development path, we have to achieve certain studies, label comprehension, self-selection, actual use. And with each, you have to select a new and naive patient population to clinical studies. And as you do so, you're subject to time. Sometimes it could prolong the matter just a couple of weeks. Sometimes it could prolong the matter a couple of months. So it's us trying to move as swiftly, as efficiently as possible to get as many engagements with the FDA, to take as many necessary developmental steps to make the story, to submit for an IND, which is our goal.
With that question, what you said about the FDA, about any friction that comes is usually good because you're doing it on behalf of the patient. It makes me think that when we built our house 20 years ago or so, our builder was kind of pissed because where he usually built, the next door city he usually built would do a fireplace, mantle, and so on a certain way. When he was in our city, the inspector came and said, well, this part's not this for our area and this and that. So I told my wife, I'm like, golly, if you want someone to fight about something, fight about the safety of a fireplace.
This is true.
Of all the things people can fight about that, or fight about what I like best for dinner and go back and forth on that. These are important things, but like you say, if there is any friction, it's a good thing if everybody's working in the same direction.
Agreed. Agreed. And I think that the ultimate output of that becomes improved patient safety. And if that's the consequence and that's the result, that's the fruit of the discussion and the process, then I think we've all won.
So Fadi, what is the actual status of this drug right now?
So in terms of the product today, we enjoy a fully commercialized footprint. We're in roughly 15,000 or more pharmacies across the country. We already partner with telemedicine providers such as 4Hims. So from a prescription commercialization perspective, we're present and ready to go.
And Fadi, we're a little bit of a unique pharmacy because we don't carry brand name drugs. And so forgive me for not knowing enough of this, but is your product, is that a brand name sitting on pharmacy shelves across the country now?
That's correct. That's correct. And so the brand name is Stendra. Generic molecule is Evanafil. And it's not as well known, obviously, as the big players, Viagra and Cialis. Been around since 2012. It is available today for prescription use, available at all major wholesalers across the country. And as I dive into it, I'm going to quickly just make a quick disclosure because I'm talking about the brand. So I want to make sure that your audience knows Stendra is currently, it's a prescription medication indicated for the treatment of erectile dysfunction for men 18 years and over. So it's not for use in women and children. That's obvious. Men who may be interested in using Stendra should consult with their doctor to assess if Stendra is right for them, as men who have been advised that sexual activity is not safe for them should not be using Stendra for reasons such as cardiovascular conditions or any other reason in perspective. And again, contraindication is nitrates. Men on nitrates should never use Stendra. So I wanted to make sure that was known. And Stendra.com will have more important safety information. But yes, it is commercially available today, available across a multitude of pharmacies. It is expensive. We do have an automated voucher coupon that helps bring it to a more affordable cost per tablet. And we hope to also work down that price in the coming future.
And what is the generic status on that? Is that chasing you down?
So we're fortunate that we're the last standing patent protected branded PDE5 inhibitor. We do lose patent in May of 2025. And then we'll probably see generic entrants at that time. I will say that if we're able to achieve over-the-counter designation, that'll give us another 3 years of market exclusivity as an OTC brand. So that is something to look forward to if we're able to achieve OTC switch.
And it could be the case where you switch Stendra and that's now in its class, but the other ones don't necessarily get to come along for the ride because they would have to do this all themselves too.
That's right. That's correct. Every brand has to make the switch. So Viagra, by way of Pfizer, has what we think perhaps sunsetted their efforts towards OTC. I think they've outsourced or offshot their Viagra pursuit for OTC to another company. We're not sure what that status is yet. Lilly has licensed the OTC rights to Cialis to Sanofi. And Sanofi is currently pursuing over-the-counter switch as well. So it's a bit of a race to see who's the first mover in this space. And we believe we will be. For our own personal reasons, but we think we're fighting for it.
So 10 years from now, do you picture that each of these is going to have their own app, their own website thing, or will there be a, I'm sure the anything's possible, or will it be more like, I'm just going to throw it out again, Amazon kind of thing where, you know, instead of picking through their 20 different disease states, you're maybe looking at 15 or 20 different brand names in the category you're talking about. I know you can't predict this, but do you see each of these being like their own app, their own home front kind of thing?
That's right. That's right. So right now, the intended platform will be every pharmaceutical will have its own app engagement with the consumer to ensure the consumer appropriately self-selects. And that's the drug device approval process. So it becomes a part of your drug application, it becomes a part of your brand.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
That's part of it.
It's a part of it. And that's the FDA who governs it. They want to know every element, every component, every line item, every behavior around it. So that, yes, every pharmaceutical that's prescription that seeks to switch OTC by way of technology will be a drug device combination and will be unique to that particular pharmaceutical.
I see. And so let me throw this out, Afadi. So will the FDA be looking as deeply as at your app to make sure that you're not speaking too highly of this side and downplaying something else? They're actually looking at that app for that.
Every line item, every word. In fact, they want to see behavior studies around the language used. They want to see behavior studies as well as how well comprehended are your drug facts label elements and metric. They're very, very thorough and proficient in making sure that everything we say to the consumer by way of this technology is fully aligned with label, but also comprehended and leads to appropriate self-selection, which is the beautiful art that the FDA practices in this matter. And so I respect what they do. It's not an easy task, but they do look at every line item, every period, every comma, every piece. One thing that we're looking to kind of produce out of this is perhaps establishing a platform that's applicable to different medications. Because the FDA says yes to this platform for this erectile dysfunction medication. Well, then all the controls around it and all the elements around it and hopefully the back-end mechanisms point to, well, then let's just plug the next pharmaceutical for approval and the next pharmaceutical for approval. So if there's sort of a common nomenclature or a common app ecosystem, some familiarity there, we hope to achieve that platform applicable to multiple assets. So look for that. Petros is working on some unique unprecedented technology to help it become that platform technology for multiple pharmaceuticals in the future, but each of them approved individually.
So it might be under, like, for example, the Petros logo that's going to have four tie-in apps somehow, four quarters of the screen or something like that.
Right. That's right. It'll be interesting to see if the FDA will allow future integrations from one product to another. So if, for example, I'm there to get my ED medication, but then I'd also like to get my migraine medication, can I switch to this new app all in a single work stream or experience? That'll be interesting to see if that happens in the future. Today, that is not in discussion and is not under review.
Back in the day, 30 years ago, when the internet came out, it was all like, internet's great. Everybody can have their own business and you can have a socks.com and coffeemugs.com. The world's going to be split apart. Everybody's going to do their thing. And then you'd have marketing guys like Al Rees and Jack Trout, these guys that wrote the 22 immutable laws of marketing. And they would say, don't ever combine stuff. Everything is a separate thing and people's minds have to be focused on one product and all that. Then you read these books now, they're so dated because 10 years later, it's like there's one company, you know, Amazon, maybe Walmart. And it's like all this stuff they were saying about, you don't want to sell books, lawnmowers, and camping stuff. That's never going to go. And here we're down to one.com. So you don't know what the right way to go is.
This is true. This is true. It changes constantly. Today, it's a race for mind share. Today, it's mind equity. Once you've captured a share of a consumer's mind, build trust, let them trust you. And when they do, and that causes you to be accountable for everything you say, do, and how you handle that consumer. But if you built their trust, you could now be a trusted person at their table to help them sell things that they need because they now trust you. You're at their door. So that's a responsibility. It's a stewardship of sorts, but it has changed completely the previous learnings.
Yeah, I've done that with the show here, and I'm just starting to monetize it and bring it on an advertiser. But
nice.
Right now, I'm just building eyes and building trust because it's so divided, the attention. And then you bring in stuff like AI, where you don't know whom to trust anymore. You think you're looking at somebody, you think it's a company, and it's not. So trust and eyes are going to be important going forward, more important going forward.
Absolutely. And I think a big one also is relatability. We have two faces. We have our public face and we have our private face. And even as entrepreneurs, for those who own their own pharmacies or own their businesses, the way you engage with your consumer, your vendors, even your industry is one way. But when you go home at night, you look at your books and you look at your business and you're scratching your head, what am I doing right? What am I not doing right? And in my fears and my concerns, you have somebody then that begins to relate to you to say, here's my fear. Here's what I confronted. Here's what I faced. Here's how I handled it. And that's relatability. And that is true treasure. And I think there's very few that are vulnerable that way. There are very few that share those underpinnings that we all struggle with in the dark behind closed doors.
Fadi, as your company goes along here, I imagine like financial-wise, I imagine there's different levels. Certainly, if the FDA tomorrow were to say, hey, go ahead, you've got to get some tremendous growth, I'm assuming, overnight. How is that all planned out with investing, and how do you take that forward at different levels of your business?
I think there are a few prospects. I think on one hand, we're in the company of some pretty large players that are in this space. And those players, I bring them up because we've spoken to many of them. We continue to compare notes with many of them. And many of them have indicated an interest to partner with us in the future. It will take a big player and big dollars to launch this commercially. And many are looking to be a first mover in this space. And when I say this space, I mean a prescription grade ED medication switched to over-the-counter, readily available to consumers that are appropriate for its use. So I'm talking about players such as Perrigo, Sanofi, Haleon, Kenvue, Bayer. These are large players. So to your point, if FDA gave us the green light and said, okay, you're approved, we would have hopefully have had lengthy discussions, ongoing discussions with these partners, Foundation Consumer Healthcare among them, where we say, oh, what needs to happen now? These are all successful commercializers of prescription OTC switches, and we hope to have the right partner at bay. We want to do all the work necessary to disrupt the marketplace by becoming the first ever approved. And then once we've done that, we're going to look for another specialty player that can help us bring it to commercial success in unprecedented ways.
Fadi, let me get this straight. So I know you'd be the first ED drug to do this. Are there drugs out there now, though, that have this model of needing a middleman of an app? I'm not talking ones that have gone from just RX to OTC, but are there any that have this model going already?
None. None exist today.
That's what I thought.
And none are prescription grade, let alone with technology guidance. The only products available over the counter today are supplements, nutraceuticals. None of them FDA guided or governed or approved per se as a prescription grade would be. And so this would be the first of its kind to ever bring this grade of medication to the fingertips of male consumers out there who are suffering from ED and are looking for a solution.
But as far as other drugs, are there any drugs out there that are doing the same thing in front of the FDA, showing them their app and having to get the app and the drugs synced, and you have to show it to the pharmacist and all that? Is that already going in certain drugs?
It is. It's currently Cialis, by way of Sanofi, is currently attempting to get the same approval with FDA.
They're attempting. They don't have it yet.
That's correct.
Gotcha. Right. Gotcha. Other disease ones either. Those are not out there yet. They might be trying, but there's not one for asthma. There's not one for hair loss. There's not one for ear infections. They're not out there yet. There's nobody that has that app in sync with their drug.
That's correct. Nobody's been approved yet. However, this is public. Crestor, by way of AstraZeneca, is the furthest along in terms of their technology. They've gone through their final stage study, which is an actual use study. And that's currently being reviewed by the FDA. We don't know yet when the approval date would be, but that they're the furthest along as far as we know publicly.
Fadi, picture out like 5 years. Where would you go past this?
The dream and the ambition is to develop a platform that can accommodate a number of key and critical pharmaceutical, prescription-grade pharmaceuticals that can be accessed without a prescription for vital conditions such as the ones we talked about, depression, anxiety, migraine, hypertension, UTIs, and to be able to build a platform that's been well known by the FDA and it includes and begins to incorporate elements of, and I know this is a scary term, artificial intelligence, but by way of algorithm, by way of reasoning, and we integrate potentially with big data. So the idea, the vision is like this. If I'm feeling a certain symptom, I know what I have, I need to get this non-prescription medication. I go to the retail pharmacy, I fill out the information. My vital signs are taken immediately. I've been informed if I have borderline diabetes or diabetes. I've been informed if I have hypertension. I've been told, keep in mind your vital signs indicate such. And according to your medical history, we think this is sufficient, but be sure to follow up with your physician on such and such matters in the future. It almost becomes a transient, quick primary care engagement, giving me the access to the therapeutic I need real time, but also informing me that I should follow up on certain metrics. All in all, improving my health and my knowledge of my health and awareness of my health. That is the vision and ambition over the next 5 years. That would be a tremendous, and we would be the foremost platform in this marketplace that then becomes the destination for many colleague companies that are looking to switch their prescription medications to OTC or non-prescription. That would be exciting.
Do you see your company as, let's say you get this running off the ground and then another two or three products come on Petros? Do you see ever shifting your company that instead of these are your products, you're running the channel or network for other products not owned by you?
I think dual. I think it's both. I think it's, we can take on our own assets and decide to switch them for ourselves, but we could also accommodate and host and license with other larger players. So I could see us playing both. Now, with the moment one seems to be predominant and the other seems to be distracting, then we'll probably standardize. But yeah, I could see us being applicable to both concepts.
Fadi, thanks for coming on. That was fun to talk about. It's always fun to talk about the future, getting technology into people's hands and having that health in people's hands. I don't think there's really anything better than that. So very cool stuff. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Mike. It's been fun dialoguing with you. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.